Acts chapter 14, and we're standing with the Apostle Paul in a whole disturbance at Lystra. Verse 18, and with these sayings scarce restrained they the people, that they had not done sacrifice unto them. And there came thither certain Jews from Antioch and Iconium, who persuaded the people, and having stoned Paul, drew him out of the city, supposing he had been dead. Verse 20, howbeit, as the disciples stood around about him, he arose up and came into the city, and the next day he departed with Barnabas to Derbe. And when they had preached the gospel to that city and had taught many, they returned again to Lystra and to Iconium and to Antioch. And back to base camp from which they were commended. Chapter 16. The work has divided into two parties. Barnabas and Mark have headed to Cyprus. A new partnership, Paul and Silas, verse chapter 16. Chapter 16, verse 1. Then came he to Derbe and Lystra, and behold, a certain disciple there named Timotheus, the son of a certain woman, which was a Jewess and believed, but his father was a Greek, which was well reported of by the brethren that were at Lystra and Iconium. Him would Paul have to go forth with him. And it speaks about those early stages of their journey together. And they're at Troas by verse 11. That's a little of the early stages. My mind's on Timothy. So please turn over then. There's a scatter of other verses I would love to read together. And turn to the last chapter of 1 Corinthians. We'll just read them in the order that they appear. 1 Corinthians, please. And chapter 16. The Apostle Paul is at Ephesus, from which he writes to Corinth across the Aegean Sea. Verse number 8 says, but I will tarry at Ephesus until Pentecost, for a great door and effectual is opened unto me, and there are many adversaries. Now if Timotheus come, see that he may be with you without fear, for he worketh the work of the Lord as I do. Let no man therefore despise him, but conduct him forth in peace, that he may come unto me, for I look for him with the brethren. Over, please, to Philippians. The epistle to the Philippians and chapter 2. One of the prison epistles we read that Timothy was with Paul in the writing of them from Rome. Verse number 19 of chapter 2. But I trust in the Lord Jesus to send Timotheus shortly unto you, that I also may be of good comfort when I know your state. For I have no man like-minded who will naturally care for your state. For all seek their own, not the things which are Jesus Christ's, but ye know the proof of him. For as a son with the Father, he hath served with me in the gospel. Him, therefore, I hope to send presently, as soon as I shall see how it will go with me, and he himself would come in the will of God. Verse 24. Now, lastly, we'll read in 1 Timothy. Well, little in 1st, little in 2 Timothy. 1 Timothy, please, chapter 4. These are the injunctions that are addressed by the apostle to his son in the faith. Verse 11, these things command and teach. Let no man despise thy youth, but be thou an example of the believers in word, in conversation, in charity, in spirit, in faith, in purity. Till I come, give attendance to reading, to exhortation, to doctrine. Neglect not the gift that is in thee, which was given thee by prophecy with the laying on of the hands of the presbytery. Meditate upon these things, give thyself wholly to them, that thy profiting may appear to all. Take heed unto thyself and unto the doctrine, continue in them, for in doing this thou shalt both save thyself and them that hear thee. And 2 Timothy, it's only just a flavour of these great themes. 2 Timothy and chapter 4. Just as we've been hearing at the end of chapter 3, he's exhorted to be well furnished with the word of God. It was vital for his work. Chapter 4, verse 1, I charge thee therefore before God and the Lord Jesus Christ, who shall judge the quick and the dead at his appearing and his kingdom. Preach the word, be instant in season, out of season, reprove, rebuke, exhort, with all longsuffering and doctrine. For the time will come when they will not endure sound doctrine, but after their own lusts shall they heap to themselves teachers having itching ears. And they shall turn away their ears from the truth, and shall be turned unto fables. But watch thou in all things, endure afflictions. Do the work of an evangelist. Make full proof of thy ministry, for I am now ready to be offered, and the time of my departure is at hand. I have fought a good fight, I have finished my course, I have kept the faith. Henceforth there is laid up for me a crown of righteousness, which the Lord, the righteous judge, shall give me at that day, and not to me only, but unto all them also that love his appearing. Do thy diligence to come shortly unto me. Come before winter, he says at the end of the chapter. That's a fair bit of reading, but it's a theme that is precious to read about. I want to speak to you, if you want to know the burden of my heart. I want to speak to you about the continuation of assembly testimony, and how that, as we look forward in life, how can it be that what we have preserved to us now will be preserved and continue in a day to come? One of the things that is should be of encouragement to us is this, that an assembly of God's people, it's not like one of those, we get them around Christmas time, they call it a pop-up shop, and it pops up quickly and they sell their Christmas jumpers and it's sweaters, and it just disappears by the time you get to January. There's something very stable about an assembly of God's people. There's something that is built to last, and I want to try and dwell on the continuation of testimony. How can it be continued? And particularly then to look at steps in the experience of a young man. And I hope this is a help to all who are here, not just the young. Steps in the continuation of one young man in his progress that took him from salvation through a stage where he was helpful until a stage where he was indispensable. And then by the end of it all, you had Paul the Apostle, who was handing over with confidence the stewardship of testimony to a man for a next generation. Now you say, what business is it of yours? I do feel a visitor. I'm so glad of your welcome. But I do know that I'm a visitor. And you say, what concern is it then of you to come to Queensland and to speak along this line? Well, for this reason. No matter where we go across the world, there is one common burden that marks particularly those of God's people who are older, and that is that there might be someone. They're looking not necessarily for dozens, but if they could just get a half dozen young believers who could become the anchor of assembly testimony in days when they are gone. And I can reflect on our own situation back home. And I don't know what that camera's doing in front of me and how far this can be relayed. But yeah, I'll just be honest. If you go back to the 1950s, this is what my childhood and young early life has only ever seen in the assembly where I was saved and brought into fellowship and still there happily. There was a number of young men, and they were only in their 20s. Some of them married. And I would say the majority of them had no background in assembly fellowship. They were men who were saved from the churches. And a half a dozen of them got saved. And early in life, they put their roots down in the things of God with conviction. And it so took place, it so happened, that all of those men, every last one of them, continued until the very end of their course as what I could call, and I think it's not Bible language, but we all know that they were just anchor tenants of the assembly of God's people. And it wasn't because it was their heritage by birth. It was their heritage by conviction. And they stood forward. There's only one of them left, a man who is now dearly beloved in his 90s. And he steps through us bodily in a very frail condition. But I tell you, for all of us, the longer he lives, the more he's dear to us. Just one last handle on things that were in the past. I hope today, I do think, that every person here who's young, everybody who has been young, and everyone who is young, looks back to a time in their life when, just saved, you were ambitious for the things of God. In fact, it's a mark of divine life. When someone who has been saved by God's grace, and you might not write about it in a magazine, and you might not tell your brothers or sisters, but sometimes in your private life, at some stage, there has been those moments of deep devotion and desire that your life might be something for God. I believe every person at some stage in life, those features, may God help us all to resuscitate some of the spirit that marks people when they're just saved. And then people who have lived a while. And I'm starting to see, we're all talking about your age and so on, and some of us still romance with the idea that we're young, but some of the young believers know that we're not young anymore. That's all our notion. But there's a middle territory in life, and I'm now in it. And in that middle territory in life, we start to become conscious that our physical prowess and the days of our best years in our bodily form are behind us. And we have reached at least a plateau, if not beyond it. And we start to become conscious of our years. And those who are older then, developing beyond that, some of you, brethren and sisters, have a concern that the young Christians can hardly be expected to have yet, because you know yourself that your stewardship of assembly life is coming towards its conclusion. And you not only are, what are the young people? What are we praying for just now with this message on Timothy? We're praying, my honest desire and prayer is this, that some of the young believers could learn from Timothy's story what it is to step forward with a sense of devotion and purpose in the things of God. And not only that, because that's only half the story with Timothy. Not only that, but there needs to be a generation of mature men and women who have handled assembly testimony for a long time, who are prepared and able and fitted and burdened to carefully steward and shepherd those who are coming along behind, so that there might be a good, careful handover of the stewardship which God has committed to us. One of the things that should be of interest, and I know I haven't got into my meat yet, but I won't be long once I do. We'll finish in good time today. One of the things that interests us, many of us, especially those of us who have been part of an assembly for a long, long time. I spoke to a sister, and Kuroi is the only place that she ever has been in fellowship. I'm in your same boat, and some of you will be as well. One of the things I'm deeply interested in is this, is the history of the assembly. And you say, are you a nostalgic person? Maybe I am. But there's more to it than that. And some of the younger believers could well do, please, with listening in and getting a hold of what God has done. That's the point. What God has done in days gone by. And it's not that we're running a museum. The reason why we should be deeply interested in what God has done in days gone by is that God has not changed, and God is still able. God is still able to work in the future. And whenever we turn then to the passage that we have looked at here, we're burdened with this, that a younger generation would be able to get a hold of that. And not just to stand and celebrate in the past what God has done, because that would be a misuse of the history of any assembly, but to step forward with a desire that you might prove God yourself in your day and generation. O God, our help in ages past, our hope for years to come. Isaac Watts. And many of you have got to London for tourism, I don't know, but his grave is easy enough to find in Bunhill Fields Cemetery. It's well worth a look if you're interested in graveyards. I remember coming, and this is a personal story, and if you forgive me, I remember coming out of a conference, and it happened more than once, or Bible readings as well, at Lurgan. I was saved as a boy of 11. My brother was a year or two older, and our cousins were at the same school. All of us went to school in Banbridge. October conference was the month back then. And I remember we used to go across and get the Lurgan bus instead of our own. And we got as far as the hall where the conference was, well underway, and threw our school bags behind the bench and got our shoes buffed up a bit and headed in our school uniform. And I want to say this to young men, because you look at men who are a little older and you don't realize that we've all been where you are. And we were thoroughly drowned at times in what we listened to, but we knew that we should be there. And we sat under the teaching of men, some of them from home, some of them, many of them from abroad. Many of them visited here as well, and you benefited from them in Australia. And I remember this, one time coming out, and I hardly knew what the man meant. There was an older man in the work of God called Mr. Ferguson, and he was very old to me, terribly old, we thought, and with his hat and all on and his overcoat, and he stopped with a little huddle of us outside. We knew very little, and we knew that we knew very little. And he said to us, he says, "Boys, we were only but 14. Our hope for years to come." I would love this afternoon that we could somehow convey to a rising generation whom God has saved that you are, if the Lord tarries, our hope for years to come. You're needed. And the only life worth living is a life that is poured out for the things of God, and a life that is invested in God's assembly. And if you find your place there, you'll find a workplace that will suck every hour of your day. And if you handle your stewardship wisely, you'll have things to do until far more than you could cope with until the Lord comes. I want to speak now about Timothy, steps in the development of Timothy. And I have four or five, and we'll speak about them briefly, one by one. I want to speak, first of all, about Timothy's conversion. Timothy was a young man, and Lystra, Derbe, that territory, was his home. Two local towns. And if you want to find out when the young man was saved, you're going to have to go somewhere between Acts 14 and Acts 16. And I'm inclined to believe that this young man was saved in Acts 14 in the first visit that Paul made with Barnabas in his first missionary journey. And that journey had gone over with Cyprus, as far as Cyprus. They had got over to the mainland in Asia. They had done their loop. They were doing a loop of teaching and preaching. And there came a stage at Lystra when the crowd started to get agitated, and they were stirred up by those that had come down from the other side. And Paul was taken and stoned and left for dead. You picture it. And we're right, I believe, going right back to the time of Timothy's conversion as a young man. And all it says is this, that whenever the people who had thrown their stones and had done their work, when they left that day and left Paul for dead, there was a little huddle of distressed disciples who stood around Paul that day and watched the man, well bloodied up and scarred, sore, wounded, a man with the help of God who stood
and went forward, not for convalescence, but to continue his work in preaching. And I believe that that was the occasion, that was the time, whenever a young man not only found Christ as his Savior, but listen please to this, I believe that he realized that companionship with Paul is dangerous company. And to be associated with a man like this is not something light, but it's something that will take its toll upon me. Any thought about romantic viewing of the Lord's work was shattered with this young man early in life. There were no light dreams of becoming a missionary and heading away and trying to relive the books of... This man started off in a place where Paul had been stoned and had known something to see the suffering and the affliction that goes with the work of God. His conversion. And you say, well, how did he get on? It's hard to piece together with any great assurance the perfect timeline. But that preaching tour of Paul went over. Young man saved. And they headed back, he and Barnabas, the story's well known, chapter 15 of Acts. And they go back to Antioch, from which they were commended, and they give the report. And in the course of time, I think it broke into the next year, in the course of time, Paul and Silas, the new team, headed out together. And they did what did not need too much guidance. What they did was to go where people had been saved already and follow up what God had done with teaching. And when they came there and arrived, you picture this, upwards in a year or two later, they saw a young man now who was not only saved, but he was, I want to speak about his commitment, because it says in Acts chapter 16, you can put your eye on it if you're inclined, if your Bible's still convenient. It says in Acts 16 that a certain disciple was there named Timotheus, and it says, which was well reported of by the brethren that were at Lystra and Iconium. Lystra and Iconium were Timothy's own home territory. And by the time this had passed, a year and a half-ish had run its course, a young man called Timothy, and listen please to this is not just rhetoric, a young man called Timothy, who was not very long saved, had started to build the confidence of his local brethren and sisters. And he stood among them as one who had potential. There's no evidence that he was trying to flex himself with ambition. In fact, one of the problems that Timothy had was this, that his self-deprecation was too strong. And almost to a fault, he kept back. It wasn't naked ambition that held the door open for this young man. Naked ambition never helps in the things of God. I heard a case, and it's a true case, of a young man in about 20 years of age. This is maybe 20 years ago, over 20 years ago now, and not long saved, he asked to speak to the overseers of the assembly. Just a young man, 20-ish. And you say, what was his request? His request was this. He said that he would like someday to be an overseer. And he says, I would like you men to give me some guidance as to how I could go along that journey in preparation for it. Now, that's ambition. And one of the things that is very hard to help is someone who just is wanting place and position. It's about service. It's not about high office. And whenever the years have passed, as far as I know, that young man has never managed to flourish, even in the way that he hoped he would back then. Timothy was a man who was prepared to be part of the cut and thrust on hard graft of the local assembly life in the area that he was in. I would love to appeal to every young person just now, and the older ones who have lived and watched some of the mistakes along the way, and some of us have sometimes found the journey difficult enough. Listen, please. We have to learn that God's desire is this, that in the small things, is this too obvious? The small things in life, in assembly life, are the place where you'll prove God. And please don't, we're not saying don't look out with thoughts about what God might do. Commit your life to him and have no reserve. Sure. Leave yourself open for whatever it might be, wherever it might be, in an assembly life, locally or beyond. But please remember this, that you need to prove God where you are. Bloom where you're planted. Prove God where you are. Don't dream, please, about going to become an evangelist in another country if you've never proved God doing the work of the gospel in your own place. I mean, your own assembly. And occupying your thoughts about going for full-time work somewhere else whenever it hasn't even crossed your mind to do it, or the confidence of the Lord's people locally. May God give you wisdom to plow in. You say, well, was he just proved there? Well, in his early life, I read as well in Philippians when Paul wrote to that assembly there, because he had been with them. We'll talk about the little bit of biography in a minute. Paul said to the Epistle of Philippi, you know the proof of him. You saw him. He was with me. Whenever I had my back all plowed up in the jail at Philippi, he was there. You watched his conduct. He says, as a son, he has served with me in the gospel. And whenever we watch the progress of Timothy, it's wonderful to see that continual journey. You might say, what did Paul put on him? I want to stop for a minute now and speak to try and give some guidance from the Word of God on how to handle someone who's younger. He wasn't given responsibility that was too large for him to carry. Listen to that, please. Because if Timothy had been asked in the early journey to carry some of the responsibility that he was left to do later on, it wouldn't have been good for him. In fact, he could have been harmed by it all, and it would have harmed the work. There was a gradual development. Slow-growing trees produce hard timber. There was a gradual development with this young man, Timothy. And he was going alongside, you would say, as he even asked to pray at a meeting. He's coming alongside as someone who's just watching, supporting, ministering to, in a practical way, gets right across Asia, gets as far as Troas. He was there at the edge of the sea when they had no guidance to go north or south, and the only way they'd go was forward. They wouldn't go back, and the sea was in front, and they had to stop. He was there when the word came through from heaven, go over to Macedonia and help us. And bit by bit, there was a spiritual muscle that was starting to develop in the young convert, Timothy. And there were things that, with development and time, that he was able to countenance, and Paul was able to give to him. And I want to encourage some here who are younger here today that there are things that you'll be able to do bit by bit. Don't feel too alarmed if there's not much thrown your way. Just put yourself in all your endeavor and energy into the things of God, and be assured far sooner than you think there's things will fall your way and your help will be needed. And you'll not just be an addition, you'll become bit by bit indispensable in the things of God. You say, will that be in a year's time? Don't be impatient. We're looking about 15 years at least of a journey that this young man Timothy was on, if you do your rough calculations. He got across to Philippi, and I want to speak about his consecration, because the thing that makes a difference for any young man is this. It says in Philippians chapter 2, he says, all seek their own, not the things which are Jesus Christ's. He says, that's the difference. He says he was a consecrated man. He was a man who had put himself and his life's priorities in the way of the things of God. Now, that's what will cost. That's what it will cost for any young person to place themselves at the disposal of God. There'll be people of your age group by the time you're in your 30s who have developed the ability to play golf, and I'm not having a go at golf. I don't know what your local recreations are. And they'll be out on their Sunday afternoon, and they'll be playing their games, and they'll be going to their matches, and there'll be aspects of their social life that will have flourished that yours will not have flourished at all. And you'll be left just like an oddball. But listen, please, you might be more of an oddball at work, but you'll be useful in the things of God. It comes at a cost. Remember this. It comes at a cost. All seek their own, not the things which are Jesus Christ's. I want to speak for a moment or two about his continuance, because this is important. As the time went on, Paul was able to place into this man's care. He was like a wee bird that had started to fledge, getting its own flight feathers. You might say, what little flights did he take? What were some of his first flights? Some of his first flights, well, one of his first flights, he was down with Paul. Do you know when Paul was down in Athens preaching? And Paul was distressed that there had been no word back yet. How are they getting on at Thessalonica? And he wanted Timothy to stay, but he couldn't have him because he would rather hear news from the first flight that I read of independence was Timothy sent up to get news from the assembly, bring back the favorable report. He was sent to Corinth. He's mentioned there. Paul said to the assembly, look after him. Be sure to look after him. I value him. He works the work of God as I do. He was sent to Ephesus. And bit by bit, in the continuation of Paul's experience, we have a man who has been gradually given responsibility. Responsibility didn't come overnight. And then when we read in 1 Timothy, we see that avalanche of exhortations. But Paul didn't just let him loose and say, that's you now. There was no sense of jealousy. He was an envoy of Paul. Paul was delighted with him, cared for him. I tell you this, one of the things which is most precious to some of us, and I know I speak for David, one of the things that is most precious for some of us is that there have been men who have been prepared to relentlessly take an interest in us. And I even mean in recent years. And I'm not going to say what all those things might be, but there are some men who are in the work of God who have been invaluable to some of us by taking an interest and being there and sometimes saying things that are sharp and steering us correctly and giving us wisdom and help and guidance if we have ears at all to listen. I would love just now that somebody here would feel something of the potential and the need. Some of you older brethren, please don't think I've been sharp, but please start to look around you because you'll be gone before you know it. Life will run its course quickly. And there's a deposit that you have had given to you. Do you hear that? There's a deposit that God has given you. There's a stewardship which is to be handed on, and time is short to get it over. What happened then? I want to speak finally about that conclusion, closing charges, and the baton passed on. I'll speak along this line. I want to finish in good time. You've had a long enough day. Whenever it came to 1 Timothy, 2 Timothy, Paul is now in his second imprisonment. What he has done in between is not clear. We were earlier on reading from the prison in Rome that he has been released. He has had movements. Perhaps has been to Spain. We're not clear. Perhaps has been to Asia, if it worked out with their prayers, as we read earlier. But he's now in Rome, and he's not in his own hired house. I think, as far as I know, I haven't been in it. I've been past it, but didn't go in. I'm sorry. We were both at Rome at one stage. And the Mamertine jail, where Paul was, they're fairly sure, is still there. It was cold, it was dank, it was dark. And hope, the hope that marked his first imprisonment, had diminished. And Paul himself had come to the stage under Nero's rule that he knew himself that the time of his departure was at hand. And the ropes of the ship were being loosed. He was about to head off. I tell you this, one of the great things that marked the Apostle Paul that every one of us should covet is this, that he says, I have fought a good fight, I have finished the course, kept the faith. I've done my work. It would be wonderful for any one of us to say, in some measure, that we have done the work that God has given us to do. One of the things that should haunt every one of us is at the close of our single life that we have to live, that we would find ourselves at the end having missed the way and not fulfilled what God has given us to do. Only one life will soon be passed, and it's only what's done for Christ will last. And in the jail, he called for Timothy. He says, come. If there was any one person, one young man, that stayed so dear to his heart, and it was more than a personal friendship, this is back to where we started off. He saw embodied in that young man the hope for years to come. And there's that final avalanche of exhortations to Timothy. They're well worth a read. Do the work of an evangelist. You say, was he a full-time preacher? I don't know. He was an assembly-based man. But in all his assembly activity, do the work of an evangelist. In all the broad spectrum of things that you're asked to do, preach the gospel. Could I say to you, all you believers from Queensland or wherever you're from, in all the cut and thrust of assembly life, keep the gospel of God's grace to the fore. It's the quarry from which the stones are taken out, the building material for God's assembly. And the assemblies locally here and home as well need building material. And Paul then takes, it's like a relay race, Paul lifts the baton and he's handing it over. It's a wonderful picture. It's the stewardship of the things of God. And Paul reaches out. I can almost see it. He has run his course. His energy has started to fade. And as he hands out that stewardship, that relay baton, he hands it into the hand of Timothy. Now listen, please. Even in athletics, there's a handover point where both hold the same thing. That's wonderful, wonderfully seen in this picture. There was a time when they both carried it. And then in the relay race, the one who has gone before drops it and starts to recede. Race is run. Energy is spent. Time has passed. And what that person who has run their course does, and Paul does it well here, it's almost as if he roars down the track after Timothy. That final exhortation to keep going. Keep at it. Be there. Stand. In days when I am gone, may God grant, and I don't know if I'll ever be back here, but there's a universal need that is worldwide amongst the people of God, and it's this, that there would be a concern amongst younger brethren and sisters that they would have a life that is worthwhile for God. And there needs to be a deep burden amongst older believers and mature middle-aged people that they need to get themselves minded to invest in younger men and women who are coming behind so that there might be all of us able to sing as regards assembly life, O God, our help in ages past, our hope for years to come. There will come a time when service will be over for every one of us. Taken into heaven itself, the judgment seat of Christ is before us, the things done in the body. May God give us help and wisdom to spend our time worthwhile. All seek their own. It might leave you lonely, but when it comes to the world to come and the judgment seat of Christ, it's only what's done for Christ will last. May God bless his word.